Howdy ho, folks, and welcome to the dead pit that never was, almost.
Yeah, we actually managed to salvage this show.
Sort of.
This week, yeah. Even though the quality and the quantity won't be near as, you know, up to par as our normal shows are.
Yeah.
Because there was a bit of a disturbance in the normal dead pit routine.
Yeah, it was I don't know if it was a perfect day for something like this to happen, but had a little bit of a power outage here at the Dead Pit Studio, and when the power came back on, the computer, the main Dead Pit computer, wouldn't. So I have no idea if, of course, we've called their special Dead Pit paid technicians. And they'll be on the case, you know, sometime
in
the near future.
We had to get the Dead Pit support tech staff to come down.
And, but I have no idea if we can salvage the rest of the Lou Perryman interview. I'm being quite honest. I have no clue. And there's another interview that we did last week that we don't have backed up. And it was with James Wan.
Oi! How you fellas doing?
So, I have no idea if we're going to have that available. And yeah. That is what we were going to announce on the show today, that we talked to the director of Saw, Dead Silence, Death Sentence, which we're going to be reviewing on this special edition of Dead Pit Radio, since, you know, it is seriously 3 or 4 hours today just getting the right crap on the laptop so we're doing the minimalist show possible. Without interviews, without call-ins, it's just back to
where we started.
Back to the future, if you will.
It's funny because seriously, this will basically be like exactly how the show was when we originally started it. Before we had time doing that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully by next week we'll have the computer back up. It, you know, I always go into things like this with the, you know, worst case scenario possible. Which would be everything on that computer is gone. But I really don't think it's that. I think that there's, at best, you know, at the Dead Pit support staff can get in there and get our files and, you know, possibly at least get, you know, some of the interview files and stuff like that that we don't have backed up. We have a lot of the stuff backed up on an external drive, of course. But, you know, we were talking though on the phone earlier. We're pretty lucky so far with this sort of shit because, you know, this show is truly, you know, underground radio, to say the least. I mean, we don't have any sort of production values or offices or any, like, you know, in a perfect world, it'd be nice to just have one computer just for the Dead Pit show, and that was all we would use it for. Unfortunately, we're not at that level yet, you know, but...
And if you ever doubt the fact that we do this show out of love of the genre, or anything other than love of the genre, I should say, then this show should be your fucking wake-up call because, you know, we're doing this basically like as bare bones as you could possibly do a show like this just because we want people to have a show. So I do have to say, this could have happened much, much worse. It could have been worse. It could have happened at a lot worse times.
Yeah.
It should have happened before now. I mean,
the thing
about it is when we've almost been doing this show for like what?
We're on
three
our third
years?
Year now.
Yeah.
So
nothing like this has ever happened. This is a first.
Yeah, and like you said, I mean, it's this time of year is not the biggest time for horror. And I know a lot of people were looking forward to the Lou Perryman second part of the Lou Perryman interview, but hopefully we can get that next week.
Yeah.
You know, I'm being optimistic here, and hopefully they can salvage that stuff. But, you know, the best thing that's happened from this, regardless of if we get the stuff back or not, I've now realized that all this stuff needs to be backed up every week. And we have almost all of it backed up, but I mean...
It is. It's a fucking catastrophe upon, like, epic proportions.
Well,
like, and
see,
on the scale...
Something worse, though. Like, for instance, if we would have had... If this happened the week before the John Carpenter interview, or the week before the George Romero interview, or, you know, something like
that. I equate this to Fangoria's back issues getting burned up. I think it's much worse than that, though.
It is.
But to anybody out there, though, that has a problem with the way we're doing this show, or that's been bitching about the fact that there's not going to be a complete show up there, buddy, fuck you.
Yeah, you can all go wipe your Satan's cock.
Goddamn whiny bitches. I swear to Christ, we do this show out of love, so yeah. Fuck you and everybody you like.
Yeah, in all honesty, you know, anybody else would have probably just said, fuck it, we're not doing a show today. But not us. We're going to do some, you know, sort of a show. I don't know if it'll be a good show or not. We'll see.
It'll be neat.
So, okay, we're going to talk about the news in a little bit. We have, of course, DVD reviews. We have a lot of DVDs to review, so that's a good thing, I guess. And we do have a book review that we didn't mention on the MySpace show earlier this week. This is from Aaron Christensen, who's actually just the editor. This is tons of different authors, I guess, for this book. It's Horror 101, The A-List of Horror Films and Monster Movies, Volume 1. So, we're going to talk about that.
Yeah, and on top of that, though, we've got DVDs of... Well, we would have had this guy on the show next week. We still might. I don't know for sure. But you got James Wan's Death Sentence, which we'll be reviewing on the show.
Mm-hmm. We also have new movie from Ryan Cavallane, Fourth Floor Pictures. It's the third chapter in the Dead Body Man series entitled Dead Body Man Chronicles.
We've got the big Gary Busey versus the Bengal Tiger epic that is Maneater. We're going to be reviewing.
Yeah.
I can't wait to talk about that.
Okay. And we have a newer zombie film entitled Boy Eats Girl.
That's right. And finally, we got a film that stars a couple people that were in the original Sleepaway Camp, including Felicia Rose and Desiree Gould. This is one that's aptly named Dark Chamber, which, by the way, is also what I like to say whenever I'm taking shit. I'm going to go in there and do a dark chamber.
Yeah. So, with that, though, I guess we can get into the news. And again, though, I mean, on the quality aspect of this show, we're doing this on a completely separate computer. I have no idea what it'll sound like, but hopefully everyone can understand us as best they can.
Well, if you don't like the way it sounds, you can always go find somebody else that does these kind of shows.
Yeah.
And it'll be shittier than hell.
It will. Lionsgate Home Entertainment released the first look at the complete specs as well as cover art for the 8 films to die for from last year's After Dark Horror Fest. They hit DVD on March 18th. The movies will be presented in widescreen with Dolby Digital 5.1 soundtracks. Included is Crazy Eights, Deaths of Ian Stone, Lake Dead, Tooth and Nail, and Unearthed. Now, Unearthed will... they will each have only Miss Horror Fest contest webisodes as special features. Each disc will retail for $19.98, and there will be boxed up in a set for the ungodly amount of $159.84.
Yeah, I don't think that'll be a great seller. And I'll tell you, the After Dark Horror Fest 2. I haven't seen the numbers on this, but I would have to be willing to say it was pretty much a bomb.
Yep.
I mean,
where is Nightmare Man in that?
I don't know. I know it's coming out too, because I saw the DVD for it, but I don't know why it's not on there.
But well, they're silly.
I don't think a lot of people got behind that this year.
Well, big problem with that is it's in so few markets, and it's just the way it's set up is so bad, like. You know, the only time you could see Nightmare Man was like on a Tuesday at a certain time. You know, it doesn't work. To me, it's not really a fest. It doesn't work like a fest. A fest would be all the movies all day long, which they don't do that nowadays, but that's a horror fest in my opinion.
I would be honest though, I didn't really care that much for a lot of the movies that I saw that were in the first After Dark Horror Fest.
I didn't either, but so, we're not the only ones. I don't think a lot of people really care for that stuff.
I know they show them all the time too on Sci-Fi Channel. You can always catch one of them on there, and I've yet to be able to sit through one completely, other than the ones we saw on DVD.
I'm guessing, you know, Low and Lionsgate, we'll get to see a lot of them this year.
Yeah, but I'll tell you this: we have seen Nightmare Man when it was just a screener, and that's definitely worth picking up anyway. More news though: Dexter, the TV show, which was on Showtime. I know a lot of people are huge fans of that show. I've never actually watched it. It says Variety got word that CBS has plans to air all 12 episodes of Dexter Season 1 with some minor cuts, more for commercial inclusion than anything else. Also, Showtime President Bob Greenblatt oversaw the cuts to the show himself, so look for Dexter on CBS starting February the 17th. Now, a lot of people say that this show is one of the best horror-themed TV shows on
the I think I watched the pilot a few months back. It was okay, yeah, you know, it didn't really, you know, beckon my name to come back and watch again, I
don't like character-driven TV shows like that anyway, where it's just one person that you have to get behind the whole time.
But the lead character that plays Dexter, I have no idea, I don't know his name or anything, but he actually does do a really good job in that role, I'll say that for him. Stepfather remake, though. Another remake. Chris Maloney has officially joined the cast of Sony Screen Gems remake. Oh, great. Sony Screen Gems is remaking it.
What a horrible oxymoron of a name, Screen Gems.
Was the original Stepfather PG-13? I don't think it was it? If it wasn't, it's definitely going to be.
I could find out real quick, but I just don't have the answer.
There wasn't a whole lot of stuff in the original Stepfather as far as gore.
Yeah, I can't remember. That movie might have been PG-13.
I think it was. So this means, like, it'll be rated G. Screen Gem. Sherry Stringfield of ER has also been cast alongside with Dylan Walsh, Cella Ward, Penn Bagley, and Adrienne Palicki. Palicki, Adrienne. Maloney is best known for his role on HBO's prison drama Oz. Nelson McCormick begins shooting in late March, early April in Los Angeles. In the film, a dangerous homicidal maniac, David Harris, loves to insert himself into families and then destroy them. He selects Susan Hardling and her three children as the next family to stepfather.
Now, I don't know how this will turn out. Knowing like the track record of films that those Screen Gems come out with, it'll probably be horrible. But the original Stepfather with Terry O'Quinn is one of those movies I have no idea why more people do not reference that movie. It's not even out on DVD.
No.
You have to buy it on VHS, which is a travesty, really. I don't know why the hell somebody like Michael Felser doesn't try to get a hold of that.
Yeah, I actually have that one on VHS. It's you know, one of the best flea market buys, you know.
And what makes it even worse is the Stepfather 2
Make Room for Daddy
is actually out on DVD, and that one's not.
Yeah, they had a ton of those Stepfather movies, though. They even had part three, right?
I think so, yeah.
Terry O'Quinn wasn't in that one, though. So, another movie, though, a lot of people talk about that was a big hit at the Toronto International Film Fest, Frontiers. Javier Jens' French bloodbath, Frontiers, will be released stateside with an NC-17 rating on May the 2nd from After Dark Films. Let me make a prediction. This will not be released NC-17. It will be released, if it's released in theaters, or... Because the same shit, wasn't the same shit last year about Captivity, that it was going to be released in NC-17. Never happened.
I'll do you one better. I'll make another prediction right now. That film will come nowhere, anywhere near us.
If it's rated R, it probably will, though. I mean, Craptivity definitely did. Waste our money on that one.
It says right here, the scope of the release depends on the number of theaters willing to show an NC-17 film. So, no, we'll never see it. You don't have to worry about it.
Well, yeah.
I got to say, like, that's the film I heard the most about, like, right when it came out. And everybody was really abuzz about it because it's supposed to be extremely gory. And I've really wanted to see it since I heard about it. I mean, it apparently blew away, like, Mother Tears and all that stuff that was supposed to be the big hype films for that Toronto Film Fest and stuff. And this is the first time I'd ever heard anything about when it was going to be playing in the States, so I'm excited. Even if it doesn't, coming around us. I'm excited if it just makes it on the DVD soon.
Yeah, from After Dark Films, of course. Yeah. That'll make it to DVD. You'll find it everywhere. So.
Also, there's news here about the April Fool's Day remake, which I can't believe this, but that's actually not going to have a theatrical release. What do you think about that? That's horrible. We can see that in theaters. Apparently, Amazon.com has set up pre-orders for the April Fool's Day remake, which will be, apparently arrive at retailers on DVD March the 25th.
Well, you know why I think that's hard to believe, though, that it's not hitting theaters? Because it was directed by the Butcher Brothers. I mean, you know, they've got, like, a massive cult following on the internet. And I just knew, like, with this April Fool's Day remake, that they would, you know, rise to the occasion and make just a kick-ass film. Because I think the star of Halloween, Scout Taylor Compton, is also in that.
Straight and
I heard that she was in
Compton.
I mean, she did such an excellent job in the Halloween remake. Great actress. So I was just really looking forward to it. And, it, you know, Scout Taylor Compton along with the Butcher Brothers, I mean... Why? Why was this not released in theaters?
I don't know, man. It's one of those travesties. Much like the fact that, you know, No Country for Old Men didn't come anywhere around here for about 2 months until recently.
That's true.
So.
Bought on DVD next month.
Yeah.
Let's take a break, though. Here's what we'll do. Since I don't have any of the commercial files to take a break,
right.
We'll play some music and then we'll come back. How about that?
That'd be great. I wonder what we'll play, though. What song could perfectly capture the essence? I mean,
who knows? But we'll be back after this break here on DeadPit.com.
Trash true.
Hello, folks, and welcome back. We'll talk about the Doom movie from Neil Marshall, Doomsday, which will open in theaters across North America on March the 14th, 2008. Now, I've heard a lot of people talk about this movie, but I don't really know exactly what it's about. Is it a straight horror film or what? I mean, it's sort of like The Descent. I had no idea what the hell The Descent was about until I saw it. So, but that, yeah, we'll definitely be checking that one out on March the 14th. I've actually been rewatching The Descent lately on Blu-ray, and it looks amazing on Blu-ray. And it's pretty cool that a movie that's that low budget looks that damn good. I mean, he must be a really good filmmaker.
Now, he's going to be at, I always get these two confused. I think he's going to be at which one? Texas Frightmare Weekend?
Mm-hmm.
That's coming up soon, which is like one of the rare times he makes a convention appearance that I've known of, too. But, he's got a website, though, for the film. It's www.doomsdayiscoming.com for people that are curious about that film. I don't really know what it's about either, but
if I ever get my computer fixed, I'll find out.
What, Doomsday? About the website?
Yeah.
Like you said, it doesn't really matter. I mean, the fact that he did The Descent is enough to make me want to go see the movie anyway, so. We'll find out more about it later.
Neil Marshall's the man.
The Poughkeepsie Tapes.
And he's from like Australia.
Yeah, this is a weird one because we actually did, we've talked about this before, we had ads for this movie on the site, and there were ads for it all over the place because everybody thought it was going to be coming out, you know, recently, but apparently MGM Studios pushed back to the fourth quarter of 2008, which, as everybody knows, the film is about a serial killer who makes a bunch of different tapes of all of his different crimes and murders and stuff, and then they're rediscovered by the police.
It's about a serial killer that butt-fucks dogs.
Really?
Yeah. That's like the hidden plot. Sort of like the Cloverfield deal where they don't want you to see the big the CG monster thing.
Right.
With Poughkeepsie Tapes, see, they're hiding the fact that the serial killer also butt-fucks dogs and videotapes himself doing that. So the reason they're delaying that is they're thinking a lot of people may be offended by that.
By butt fucking dogs. I can see why how that might offend people.
So, yeah.
I gotta be honest though. Like, I know there's people that say that they're really mad about this film being pushed back. I don't give a shit. This movie, like.
I've been told this movie's not very good.
Here's the thing. I don't like that trend of shooting shit on, like, handheld camcorders and stuff, which is what this film is.
You don't like nothing.
Because basically, like, if you're going to make a film, then, like I said before, you should definitely try to be as bombastic as possible.
You got to keep it bombastic, I mean, you know.
And when I say bombastic,
Uncle Bill lives in a bombastic world.
Of course.
Uncle Bill is a bombastic girl.
Of course, I mean, by bombastic, I mean that you should keep things larger than life. It shouldn't be on a camcorder. It should have lots of
gotta keep it bombastic.
It should have lots of. It should look like a fucking film, you know, not something you could just watch on DVD and enjoy at home.
Yeah, but I think the shot on video stuff can work if you have a good. If you come from a good angle.
Oh, you don't know.
I do. I'm serious. I think that if you can get away from the Blair Witch thing and think of something else to do with the.
But these dumb sons of bitches, August Underground's already done exactly what this film's about anyway. Yeah. So who the hell?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, August Underground, that was a great idea. Whether or not we like the movies or not, that was an ingenious idea. But somebody needs to come up with something else, you know, do something else with the handheld thing.
Show you stapling your balls with a camcorder.
Yeah. Show you sticking apples up your butt.
How about just apple cores? Mm. You eat the apple, then stick the apple core up your butt.
That'd be nice. A lot of fans of Clive Barker may enjoy 2008. The release of Midnight Meat Train in May, which a lot of people are looking forward to. That's actually an old short story you were talking about.
It was in the Books of Blood series that Clive Barker wrote.
Yeah. And I believe he also has new novels coming out, The Scarlet Gospels, which, you know, I know you're highly looking forward to that one.
Oh, yeah.
And Book of Blood, baby.
Yep.
It's gonna be the ink, and it's gonna be from Clive Barker's blood. You better watch out with that too.
Anyway, yeah, they're making a film out of that, I think, out of the books of blood.
The books of blood. Yeah, and isn't Doug Bradley also starring in that?
He sure is. Yeah.
So
I'll tell you who's directing it. You're really fucking creamy pants for this. Your creamy little panties. John Harrison.
Oh, Lord. John Harrison. Mm-hmm. He's back from the dead.
Back from Tales from the Dark Side and scoring films for George Romero.
Yeah, he's killer.
So I got to talk about this because Kentucky Fried Chicken has always been really good to us.
Yeah.
We've always stood behind the Colonel.
Well, a lot of people don't know. I mean, they actually do support Dead Pit. They send us a check every month, you know.
Right.
For, well, not really a check. They just send us some gift certificates for some KFC. But that's good enough as money.
This next story has severely got me worried that we're going to be sued in the near future. Because old C.L. Gregory, who was, of course, behind the Kentucky Fried Horror Show, which at one time or another he had Mama from Mama's Family attached to, and Jessica Simpson, you know, according to him. But says the Midnight Films production has run into a snag before a single frame has even been shot. He goes on to say, we are facing a possible lawsuit from KFC over the title of our film. It seems that fast food chains objects to horror movies and has promised that it will not allow this one to be released. Now, of course, we talked about this before. This film was supposed to be shot in and around Kentucky and Tennessee. It was going to be shot around us because I actually talked to the guy about it. But he says that KFC stated in a letter that he recently received that they do not like horror films, nor that they intend to allow it to be released for public viewing. They have further stated that they intend to silence my First Amendment rights. Ah, more whiny liberal bullshit. Let's see here. He goes on to say, they stated that the project's poster and its depiction of human dismemberment is shocking, and that any film that reflects such vile acts should be discontinued.
Yeah, this guy's going to have to change the name of his movie. I hate to tell you, man.
Yeah.
You could be call it the Kentucky something, but you can't call it the Kentucky Fried whatever. I mean, that's just not going to work.
Yeah, you remember the Kentucky Fried movie, though?
Yeah.
The John Landis
film? They got sued, too, didn't they?
I don't know if they got sued for that or not.
I think they did.
But I can tell you this. Yeah, once you get somebody like KFC, it's a huge corporation on your ass, you're definitely going to have to change the title.
And besides, I mean,
unless
I don't know
it's
this
just
CL,
bullshit.
I don't
it could
know
be.
It's, yeah, it could be bullshit because this C.L. Gregory dude. I mean,
he's
I don't know him,
at that, so.
But he's a pretty good bullshitter. I mean, we've talked to a few people and just asked them flat out about the movie. And there's one person that still listed, I believe, on IMDb is starring in the movie. She told us she's never talked to the guy ever. So I don't know. I mean, I'm thinking a lot of these casting and like, you know, a lot of this shit's bull, in my opinion.
Yeah, but we won't know until the film ever gets released, I don't guess, for sure.
You remember independent filmmaker Bradley Sykes, don't you?
Of course.
You know, such great films as Mutation and the Camp Blood trilogy. Great little independent slasher films. He gave our good friends at Fangoria the first news about an upcoming horror comedy film, Burying the X, which he produced for writer-director Alan Trezza. The movie stars John Francis from Freaks and Geeks. You remember that show?
I
do. A lot of people do, actually.
I do remember, but I never
watched it. It didn't last too long. John Francis Daly, as a young man still coping with the recent death of his girlfriend, in an attempt to move on, he decides to go out on a blind date with a quirky girl named Olivia, which is actually played by Danielle Harris, which means I'm going to definitely see this now.
Mm-hmm.
But then his deceased ex turns up to interrupt things with an ultimatum. He says it's a very different kind of role for Danielle Harris. We're posting the film now and we'll soon be submitting it to festivals. Mercia Monroe co-stars in Burying the X, which was shot in Panavision Genesis High Def Camera. Oh, shit.
That means it'll be out in HD soon.
It'll be out in Blu-ray. And it was also utilized on features like Superman Returns and Apocalypto.
Woo.
That guy's shit. He went from the shot on video camcorders to freaking
right into HD.
Panavision Genesis High Def.
The thing about it is and I was going to talk about this a little bit too anyway, but the trend of getting, and this is a fairly recent trend, of getting these 80s horror stars that were in a lot of these films that a lot of people remember from that era and putting them into these films fucking sucks. All right? And I'll tell you why it sucks. Because this has been going on for a long time now, where people base their entire films around these people. Because it never lives up to the hype, because they never have roles that last any longer than like 5 or 10 minutes. Every film I've ever seen that claims to have people from like, you know, it always claims like you got stars from Halloween or Texas Chainsaw Massacre or Sleepaway Camp or any of those films like that, their roles are always the biggest bunch of shit. Like they just, it's like they get them in there for about a couple of hours and just film a bunch of crap with them.
Yeah, we're probably talking about at least one movie that does that on the show.
Yeah, and there's countless movies like that, though, that I can think of.
I think Zombiegeddon was probably the worst case of that I ever seen. Because
that was just because it was loaded with people.
Yeah, it had tons of people, and they were all in the movie for maybe about 2 or 3 shots apiece.
I remember Linnea Quigley's in that movie for literally like 30 seconds, and it's just like a shot of her giving this little speech.
There was another one. There's another one called A Dead Calling, which we never saw, but I heard it was absolutely like horrible. And, hell, we could go on forever talking about it.
I hate that trend, though. And I've just learned,
Fallen
man,
Angel,
anytime anybody says, you know, this film is, or they market the film on the fact there's a bunch of 80s or 70s cult stars in it, it's not what you think.
Yeah.
It's not, they're not going to be in it that long. It's going to be bad. That's all I can tell you. But also, though, more news topics and I'm done bitching. The Wolfman, with the new one with Benicio Del Toro in it, right? A lot of people, we reported on this a long time ago, and I haven't heard much about it. A lot of people have been wondering what happened with the films. But,
they haven't even filmed it yet, are they?
Yeah, it's speculated because of the writer's strike. The Wolfman is still set to go, though, and beginning February the 8th, the cameras will roll on the film. It's supposed to have screenwriter Andrew Kevin Walker. Benicio Del Toro, of course, will play Larry Talbot. Anthony Hopkins will play his father. Emily Blunt will play Wolfie's love interest. And other players include Rick Baker, who's doing the effects.
Really?
If people knew that, yeah. And Alwyn H. Kutchler, who will be
photographing. I didn't think Rick Baker would do horror movies anymore.
Apparently he is. They give him, price is always right, like Million Dollar Man said. Everybody's got a price and everybody's going to pay.
That guy's got a skunk haircut now. Have you seen him?
I know Benicio Del Toro does, too, though. The film is set to be released on February the 13th, 2009.
God.
Long,
that's a long time away. So, I guess that's all the news. I mean, there's not a whole lot, again, as we were saying earlier, not a whole lot of stuff to talk about anyway, so. But you want to talk about the DVD releases?
DVDs are coming out this week. Y'all fans can spend all the money on.
Oh, what the pudding? The Attic is coming out January the 15th.
Now, that stars Lindsay Lohan?
No, that's The Attic.
Oh, I thought you said The Attic.
Hers is The Attic.
Yeah, that's what I thought you said.
That's got Britney Spears and Lindsay Lohan. Also, I believe The Attic, the one I'm talking about, is the one directed by Mary Lambert.
Britney Spears is addicted to being insane.
She is. She's addicted to fucking publicity.
You know what?
I know what.
You know what, that I love that shit, though, like them crazy-ass bitches that don't know what the fuck are doing. That just turns me on.
It should, because they're just crazy enough that we might have a chance with them. Have we, like, run into them in a dark alley?
Hey, but just please, let's see if your asshole's warm. I want to see your butt.
Okay, you got...
I don't give a fuck what people say. I still think she's hot.
I do, too, in a crazy, sort of, like, coked out, crystal methish Drew
Barrymore.
There's
Wheeler from that ambulance the other night.
Mm-hmm.
But that was hot. I don't give a fuck what anybody
that
says.
That was all fucking hazy right
that
there.
That was off the chain.
Let's see. Red Eye, the Korean version, coming out from Media Blasters. You got Monster, a.k.a. Tokyo, coming out from Asylum, which you know is based around Cloverfield. You got It Came from Beneath the Sea, 2-disc special edition from Sony Pictures. Earth vs. the Flying Saucers from Sony Pictures. Ghost Sun from Zenon. I haven't heard anything about Zenon in a long time. And Winter Beast.
Winter Beast. That sounds like a flavor fucking chewing gum or something.
Give me a stick of Wienerbeest. Oh, it's fresh. It's Wienerbeest.
Oh, God. So, I guess we'll take another break. And maybe I could find like a commercial where we could play right here or something, or we could play another song from Motorhead or whatever.
Yeah, you want to go ahead and play a song from Motorhead?
I don't know. But we'll be
double
back.
Double up the split.
We're going to talk about, I guess we're just going to read the fan mail. It'll be the fan portion light this evening. And we'll get to the DVD reviews, and that'll be it for this special WonderCom edition of DeadPit.com
version 0.5.
The beta version.
Yeah.
Hope y'all liked the second part of the. Oh yeah, that's right. We didn't have that anyway.
No.
Well,
sure
fuck.
Didn't.
Son of a bitch.
Yeah. Normally, this would be the point in time when you know.
We thank you, son of bitches.
Yeah.
You know, just because that's what we should say, I guess. Even though we really don't want to thank you, I guess.
We talk about stuff we might be doing, and coming shows and stuff like that, but we have no idea. I mean, right now everything's up in the air. It's like,
We'll be going to see Cloverfield when that comes out next week, I think.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what the big monster looks like. It's some big fucking deal now.
Big monster.
It's kind of a big deal. But instead of all that bullshit, we're just going to go ahead and get right into the fan portion.
Yeah, we're gonna take your phone call. No, we're not.
We're not gonna do that.
Shit.
That's been temporarily discontinued from the programming.
Son of a bitch.
Ain't that a bunch of horse snot?
It is. We're going to get the Dead Pit staff who work 24/7 on the Dead Pit computers. We're going to have everything up and running by next week.
I think we got Jennifer Srandon.
Jennifer Srandon.
Working on
it. Who's our associate assistant here. Hmm. Administrative assistant, I guess you would say.
Yeah, she doesn't like it if you call her secretary.
Yeah.
Administrative assistant.
You know. She's calling people, making sure we're going to have all of our servers and computers and all that stuff up, back and running for next week. So which when hopefully we can continue with the Lou Perryman interview.
Hopefully.
Mm. So, other stuff on the site, though, there's not much because I'm not going to be able to put up much. We had some stuff planned, but no, that's not going to happen now either. So y'all can just enjoy this little show that we're putting on for you and go fuck yourself.
Yeah, I don't really know what else to do.
Well, what we're going to do now, though, is just read off some of the fan questions that we were asked this week. And, again, it's just like an old Dead Pit show from, like, you know, back in 2006, pretty much, where we didn't really have fan call-ins or anything. We just, you know, read the questions, which is way too old school, but who cares?
So, you ready?
Let's do this.
Let's get this motherfucking party started, right? Says, what do you guys think of King Diamond? Being a fan of horror and metal, I like his stuff a lot. This is from, I don't know how to exactly pronounce this, Cthulhu.
Cthulhu for you.
I think about King Diamond. I'm a big fan of some of the Merciful Fate stuff. I think Return of the Vampire is one of my favorite albums of his. Because it's got, you've been hit by the curse of the Pharaoh.
I don't like King Diamond or Merciful Fate. There.
And that's that.
Next question we have here is from Horror AZ. If you're able to go see Diary of the Dead, are you planning to do a road video review of it? It's the only horror movie I'm really looking forward to this year. Are there any others that you're looking forward to? Midnight Meat Train could be promising, he says. For non-horror, I'm really looking forward to Rambo because it looks brutal.
Well, we just mentioned one that I'm looking forward to is actually Cloverfield now. Mm. I'm definitely looking forward to Diary of the Dead. I'm definitely looking forward to Rambo because that movie looks uncompromisingly fucking gory for a mainstream action film.
The only thing that worries me about Rambo is all they're showing is the gore scenes pretty much in the trailer and the TV spot and stuff, which leads me, like, it could be a little bit like Hatchet. Like, that could be all there is.
Could be.
And there's nothing else to it, and it could suck. But, you know, we're going to go see that one.
I'll tell you
another. We're going to probably do an on-the-road review of Rambo. That's going to be something different. You know, not really a horror film, but who cares. Another one, though, that I'm looking forward to is non-horror, is definitely Indiana Jones. I mean, if Steven Spielberg is going to do that, I would think it would almost guaranteed be fucking killer. But after this long, you know, and getting all those people back, and of course,
fucking Karen Allen's back in there,
and she looks great. She looks just like she did. So
yeah, there was something on the Today Show with her where she does look really good.
Yeah. But as far as horror stuff goes, Trick or Treat is another one that comes out. It's like a anthology set around Halloween.
Yeah. And we mentioned this one before too, but on the show, but I'm looking forward to seeing Frontiers when it comes out, because everything I've seen with that movie makes it look like it's like almost like high tension kind of gore and atmosphere to that film from what I've seen.
So yeah, I think there's a fair amount of stuff to look forward to, you know.
Well, let's see. This is a pretty straightforward question. Great show last week. What is your most prized DVD? This is from Franco Stein.
Most prized DVD.
Lord.
Well, it's not like I have one single DVD. It's like a holy grail of all DVDs.
Yeah, that's a bit odd.
There's a few, though. Like, one that I'm thinking about selling just because I could make a lot of money on it is the Nightmares DVD, which I found used a couple of months ago, which is out of print. It's one of the movies that Anchor Bay licensed from Universal back in the early days of Anchor Bay. And, you know, they had licensed for maybe about, you know, a really short period of time. I don't know how long. And it wasn't available long, so that's why it's so rare. But actual DVDs, like the one that I always look at and just, because it's one of the first DVDs I ever bought, and now it's signed by the director, Rogel Deodato. It's Cannibal Holocaust, and it's the Substance DVD, which was probably the best bootleg DVD available before the actual release came out in America. So that's one of them. And there's another one. I have Halloween 25 Years of Terror that's signed by a ton of people from the Halloween series.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Yeah, if you're talking about, like, for me, DVDs that I personally like the most and, like, cherish in that way, it'd by far be the Dawn of the Dead Ultimate Edition, which I think is one of the best releases ever in the history of fucking DVDs. But, like, as far as stuff that's rare and that I probably wouldn't give away or probably wouldn't trade or sell or anything like that, I have the Ilsa box set, which I know is now rare.
You don't
shit.
Give shit away.
That's true. I don't like to do it. And I've got Mad Man from Anchor Bay, which is hard in hell to find, but apparently it's going to be back out again. There's like a couple more like that, too, that I was trying to think of while I was sitting here.
Yeah.
That, oh, yeah, the one that I'll definitely never get rid of, even if they do fucking come out with it again, is the Silent Night, Deadly Night 1 and 2 Anchor Bay pack, because Silent Night, Deadly Night 2 is, in my opinion, just as good as the first one because of how bad it is.
Yeah, I would say Anchor Bay will probably come out with part two as a single edition, but as far as like the double feature deal, I would doubt it. And there's a lot of good DVDs out there just for movie, you know, purposes, like the Dark Sky Texas Chainsaw.
I was gonna say that. That's exactly what I was thinking. Yeah. Because of how well they did the transfer, that's probably one of the best.
And there's a lot of
DVD.
Awesome extras on it too. Like there's a couple of documentaries on it. You know, full-length documentary, so you can't go wrong with any of the stuff we mentioned, though, if you can find it, of course. Something here from our good buddy Bean from Pennsylvania. He says, is Pittsburgh too far for you guys to travel for a convention? I see Whorehound has one planned there for this summer. He also says, any chance of having old Slipcase Felcher back on the show in some capacity?
Interesting, he mentioned that.
That guy is damn interesting to listen to.
He's going to be on Rue Morgue Radio.
Yeah, I think he's going to be on Rue Morgue Radio tonight, which is another one that's sort of on demand. I mean, you can...
I don't have a problem recommending Rue Morgue Radio people because they've always been really good to us, unlike some other bastard.
He also asks us, what's our opinion on the It's Alive movies? I always wanted to see the triple feature. He says, I always see the triple feature DVD at my FYE for fairly cheap, but I don't know how good the movies are. Is it worth buying, or would I be better off taking a giant steaming dump on my $12.99? Pittsburgh for us is, what, about 5.5 hours?
Yeah. And if you consider the fact that they're having one in Indianapolis, they're having a Whorehound in Indianapolis, so I don't see, like, going to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's not totally out of the question at some point in the future us going to Pittsburgh if it's some huge show or
they'd
something.
Have to have a hell of a fucking show for me to go to Pittsburgh.
Because seriously, I would love to go and just visit Monroeville Mall, and I mean, I can't believe you wouldn't want to do that.
I would, but that's, man, like, that's just too much hassle and too much time to travel for that kind of stuff.
But I mean, odds are we'll be going to some Whorehound this year. Hopefully it's the one in a couple of months. Who knows?
Yeah. Opinion on the It's Alive movies. I would just watch the first one. It's probably been a couple months ago. I really like that movie, and I think it had more to do with the fact that Larry Cohen had something to do with it.
It's a very low budget. The first one's a very low budget movie.
But it's very well acted, too. I forget the guy's name that's like the father in it, that's the star, but he's been in all kinds of stuff, too. He's a good actor.
I haven't seen that movie since I ran the video back when I was like 10 or 11. That's one movie I haven't seen in years.
I don't think I've seen It's Alive 2 or 3, though.
I don't know. I don't remember it, but I remember I've seen the first one.
I'll tell you this, though. I would probably recommend just buying, if that set, he says it's a triple feature. Okay, if that set's like $12.99, I'd buy it just for It's Alive. Like, you just consider it a bonus that It's Alive 2 and 3 is on it.
It's a bonus disc, baby.
That's what I would do. Because the first one is really good. I mean, in a cheesy kind of way that movie was intended to be, though.
Yeah.
It says, "Hey, guys, the two main theaters here have huge stand-ups for Uwe Boll's In the Name of the King, and it's actually playing starting tomorrow. The Mind Boggles." That's just a random comment that somebody sent in that I printed out. I don't know how
Never underestimate Uwe Boll.
I think that's the lesson for all this. Is like, I know people talk shit about Uwe Boll all the time, but the fact is that the guy gets stuff released here theatrically with a ton of advertising. Like, I've seen that movie advertised more than I've seen like Cloverfield or anything else get advertised, really. And it's not even I wouldn't think that would be like a mainstream type of film anyway. Has Jason Statham as like the lead guy.
Yeah, but the reason it's so mainstream is Uwe Boll, pretty much.
Yeah, you can't stress that enough.
Well, that name, just, perfection. That's what we get from. So, something here from the Muckster, Scott Muck, who says, "Just wanted to say I totally agree with you guys on the Asian horror thing. I don't know how so many people got suckered in on that whole subgenre. Anyway, I had a few questions for you. Do you know if the Writers Guild strike is going to have much effect on the horror genre? I imagine all the movies that come out this year won't be affected, but what do you imagine will be the effect for 2009? And do you think that this will actually help out the independent horror folks? What are your thoughts on that, and do you have any inside info?" Well, I really don't think that the writer's strike is really going to help independent folks at all.
We talked about this, though, a long time back when we very, very first heard about that, because there was a particular guy who won't mention who actually thought that because of the writer's strike, he was going to get people like Angelina Jolie and Jessica Simpson to star in his independent films and stuff.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. These people, like, they could not work. Even the people that have
five, 10 years would be fine.
Are new to the game, like Reese Witherspoon, Jessica Simpson, those people like that. They don't have to work, man. Yep. They got like $20 million a picture.
Reese Witherspoon, just for instance, I know for a fact she makes well over $1 million a picture.
A million? She makes about $20 million a picture.
Really?
Yeah.
God, people are dumb. But
the thing is, too, I think it will affect.
They may be asking, though, about like if some of these studios would buy the independent films up and want to release them theatrically.
Why? Now, that might happen. If it gets like push comes to shove, you might see a lot of other of these mainstream studios that might not otherwise look at these guys' films.
Here's how it would happen, though. If the writer's strike was going on 1 year from now and there was absolutely nothing, being made, nothing being written, you might actually see some of the more mainstream, high-budget independent films be released theatrically. Maybe. I think a lot of these studios, though, wouldn't give, independent filmmakers the time of day.
Yeah, I don't either.
They would, like, snarl their nose.
But apparently, though, as far as mainstream stuff goes, we were just talking about this earlier in the show, it's already started to affect films like the Wolfman and stuff like that, which would have probably been finished a lot sooner had it not been for the strike, which is what halted the production on it and stuff. So there's probably a lot of films, not even just horror-related, that are in the same kind of condition. It might eventually end up hurting something like Friday the 13th, the remake, and stuff like that. Although, I don't think you even need a writer on a movie like that, but apparently they get paid. Have you noticed, though, that even like a lot of the talk shows and the comedy shows are starting to go back on air without writers, or they're writing their own stuff.
And they're getting in trouble for that. I mean, some of the writers.
But I understand that shit, though, because it's like they said. I mean, there's other people besides writers that work on those shows that they're going to be putting out of jobs if they don't go back to work.
Yeah.
Like, they got all the gaffers, the, the staff that sets up the shit.
Cameramen.
All that stuff, You can't just think about one little group of people. And therein lies the problem.
Yeah, fuck the writers in the butt.
Well, I mean, they're just one part of that whole show, too.
In the defense of the writers, though, I think that they're wanting a percentage. They don't get any percentage of online movie sales and rentals and stuff like that, and that's the big thing. And to me, they deserve that. You should give in and give them something,
It shouldn't have even been a fucking issue.
Yeah.
That's the thing. I mean, it really shouldn't have. We shouldn't even be having a strike. But now that we have one, unfortunately, you put everybody else's jobs at risk, too. I mean, you might have to take it in the ass a couple times. Which brings us to our next question.
I mean, you can look at it from both perspectives. You have, I just looked at that. You have the studios that don't want to give in, and you have the writers that want more money. So it could be either side, you know. Studio could be at fault. The writers guild could be at fault.
Yeah, but I guess like the third side of it would be all the people that you don't ever hear about, which are the people that work on those shows that are not involved in the strike and that are going to lose their jobs as well.
Well, they've already lost their jobs right now, I guess.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's why a lot of the talk shows are going back on air to keep those people from losing their jobs. That's why Jay Leno's back and Conan O'Brien's back and all those people. And I think the Daily Show just...
They all have beards, dude. You know what I'm saying?
I guess that's some kind of a nod to the strike.
Jay Leno, I think he's... Something around his face, he can't grow a beard.
Because his face looks like a fucking bicycle seat or
That's
something?
That's probably why, yeah. He, you know, instead of using his dick, he could use his chin on a woman. And be more pleasurable, probably.
Looks down, hits himself in the balls. Anyway, I've been waiting to get to this one, though, because we've got to talk about this a little bit. This comes to us from a guy named Robert Patterson, who says, I've been a listener of your show for the past couple of months, so it was disappointing to hear your comments on gay-themed horror films. While most of these films are just as bad as any other horror films, it's sad to hear that you refuse to even see them based on their content. There are, in fact, huge legions of gay horror fans, but now none that will support your website and show. Okay. Well, this is in reference to something that we said last week about TLA releasing, like, a bunch of
gay-themed
horror DVDs. All right, first of all, I don't know, like, what kind of spell this guy has on the huge legion of gay horror fans that listen to this show, but I don't imagine just because he didn't like it that everybody else would have the same opinion.
He's like, here, now you remember from Bozo, Wizzo, you know, the
Wizard. Yeah, the Wizard.
He would have this, like, he's got a channel on, like, the gay TV channel, was it called? Gay TV or something like that?
Oh, yeah, I forget. It's Logo or something like
but,
that?
But, yeah, he can also, you know, he'll put, you will not watch or listen to Dead Pit. No, 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 no,
But seriously, though, like, independent-minded people of any kind of orientation can make up their own minds about what we said. The thing about it is that I wrote back that I was telling them, it's just a personal preference of mine to not want to watch films that are gay-themed horror, because I know I'm not going to like it.
Yeah,
it doesn't have really anything to do with
gay-themed films of any sort are for gay people.
Yeah.
They're not, you know, you have your subgenre, your own subgenre of films. You know, heterosexual people don't have
hetero hole.
It's just
I look at it like certain people don't want to watch torture movies, right? Because it's their preference. Like, they know they're going into it, they're not going to like them. Gay themed films, I just don't think I'm going to like it. It's not because I'm prejudiced, it's just because that's the kind of stuff that I don't want to watch anyway.
Yeah, it'd be like watching gay porn. Like, why would...
Yeah, I'm not going to get anything out of it.
You know, it just, you know, I just don't get anything out of...
I can see, too, going back, like, when we were talking about how that might have offended people.
I know how it did. The main reason is we talk the way we talk. We're from Kentucky.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. And, you know, we don't mean to offend anybody on here. We really don't. A lot of the stuff we say on here is honestly just for comedy. You know, the thing earlier, that's just comedy. I'm not serious. So don't, you know, send... Glad after Dead Pit or anything. I mean, we have no problem with gay horror fans.
I think that sometimes, I think
honestly,
sometimes, like, we go for the laugh. Anyway, but I think from now on, though, that, and most people that listen to us know anyway, that when you listen to the show, you really have to listen to it kind of lightheartedly, because a lot of shit that we say is just off the cuff type of blue humor that you do most times. This ain't the fucking Amish show or anything.
No, I mean, we're just joking around. And, you know, I can't help it that we're rednecks and we talk the way we do, which makes us sound more like, you know, we're bigots or something. But shit. I like gay people. I don't have a problem with gay people. I don't have a problem. You know, a lot of people may think that we're racist too since we're from Kentucky.
Right.
That's not true. Myself and Uncle Bill have a lot of African American and Spaniard Friends.
Fucking Spaniard, really? Yeah, we know a lot of Spaniards.
We love Spaniards on Deadbeat.
That's awesome. I'm a big fan of Puerto Ricans as well. Yeah. I'll stick you.
Yeah.
Puerto Ricans are bombastic. Puerto Ricans will stab the shit out of you.
So, that's it for the fan portion, though. Hopefully, you know, everyone enjoyed it and we didn't piss off any more minorities.
Yeah, I think we probably did. I guess that's it. That's all the questions I've got.
Yeah, so we'll go and take another break and get right into the DVD reviews. And end this show, you know, whatever sort of show it was, and hopefully resume the regular Dead Pit, you know, propaganda next week.
So let's go ahead and take a break, get into the DVD reviews.
We'll be back shortly here on Dead
Pit.com.
How's everybody doing?
I'm fine.
I'm doing good. Just a couple things I guess we could remind the folks. Check out the Dead Pit Movie Review Database. We have a ton of movie reviews on there. From VHS horror reviews to Laserdisc horror reviews. I think we've got like one or two Laserdisc reviews on there. We got a couple of book reviews on there. We have, of course,
book reports,
DVDs, DVD reviews, and a brand new section of HD horror. So we're going to be reviewing Blu-ray and HD DVD, at least as long as HD DVD's around.
Yeah, which probably won't be too much longer.
So check that out. Also, remember, tonight, midnight, we have our weekly chat, and hopefully I'll be able to participate in the chat this week, and hopefully the lovely and luscious Miko will show up this week.
I don't know what her deal is. I haven't seen anything from her. She just disappears every now and then for a week or so. And then as far as her show goes...
She goes on a cocaine binge or
something. That'd be what it is. Who knows? She's like snorting coke off stripper's titties or something.
God, sounds good.
But anyway, male or female, I've yet to figure that out. The thing about it is, she's supposed to have had an episode up for Christmas. She still doesn't have a new episode up, so who knows?
Yeah.
Cryptique, which is one show.
Slacking Miko Macabre.
Actually up.
So we'll be doing the chat, or at least I'll be in there. Uncle Bill usually shows up a little later.
Yeah, 30 minutes to an hour.
He likes to be fashionably late after he uses his fleshlight.
I like to sit around for 30 minutes, just like look at the chat room window and play with my dong.
Yeah.
You know, after I wonder come, I'll come in there.
So... First up, though, we're going to talk about a book, and occasionally we review books on here. This isn't like a normal thing we do on Dead Pit, but every once in a while, a great book comes along that we want to review, and this is definitely one of them. This is from Aaron Christensen, who edited the book, and it's actually written by tons and tons of fans of horror films.
I think most of the people that wrote this book were involved in the IMDb boards at one time or another, under a lot of these different films, and they all kind of came together through that. But it is like a fan review book. It's called Horror 101, the A-List of Horror Films. The A-List of Horror Films of Monster Movies, Volume 1. It's basically just a series of different reviews that each one of the fans did of, I guess, one of their favorite films,
yeah.
Which is a great idea, and I don't know why it hasn't been done more. Most of the time when you get a review book, it's one person that writes a review of, like, a series of films, like The Book of the Dead that we've got over there.
And there's certain writers out there that, you know, are just particular people aren't huge fans of a particular movie. Like, take me, for instance. I particularly don't like Children of Corn or the Amityville movies, anything like that, the first Amityville movie. And, you know, other people may appreciate those movies. And, see, with this, you have some of their favorite movies. People are going to be reviewing some of their favorite films. They'll tell you the aspects of the film that they enjoyed and why they liked them. And that's what makes this one a little different than all the others.
Yeah, because none of the people that do these reviews, they're not like picking these movies to review just because they're considered genre classics or anything like that. They're picking them to review because they're one of their favorite films. And there's so many people that write in this book that they each have the opportunity, every person has the opportunity to pick one film, and it makes it really entertaining to read because you get to see, I mean, these people have obsessions about these certain films. You get to see what it is about each one of these films that draws these people to it. And if you like the same kind of film, you can relate to what it is that draws. I think there's a review in there about Dawn of the Dead and Day of the Dead together for somebody like me that really loves those movies, you can completely see where that person's coming from. And you also, too, you get to learn stuff about the movies that you probably might not know before because these people know so much about each one of these movies.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of like picture me writing a big, long, 2-page review on Mad Men and giving you all the details on that. It's similar to that where, you know, you obsess about a certain movie over the years. It may not even be your favorite movie, but it may be something that, you know, like Mad Men for me. It's one of those movies that I'm just interested in. I want to find out more about it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, along the way, we got to interview certain people that we could talk about the movie, you know, in this form. So it's sort of what it is. And
it's the perfect, the reviews are the perfect size, too, because they're normally like between 2.5-3 pages long, okay, uh-huh. Each review is, which to me is
it's great toilet reading.
It is. You know. I mean, it's great the way that it's set up because they're not too long and they don't get into too much of philosophically about them like a lot of authors do about horror films, like the origins of the film and what it has to do with ramifications of social consequences and stuff like that.
And it's an eclectic group of horror films. Of course, you got all the classics like Friday the 13th and Hellraiser and Halloween and all that stuff. But you also have, you know, movies like Deep Red that they review on here and, you know, Ringu, Rosemary's Baby, Shivers, which a lot of people may not know about. You know, just you've got the classics on here and you've got the cult movies, a mixture of those. So it's a perfect book for any sort of fan of cult, you know, movies and horror movies.
I like the fact that I guess this was the editor's decision that they decided to put a lot of the films together in one review. Like they put The Thing from Another World and John Carpenter's The Thing together in a review to kind of, you know, side by side show what the differences and similarities of the films were and why people liked them. They put Dawn of the Dead and Day of the Dead together, of course.
Evil Dead and Evil Dead 2.
Did they do that one? Well, I don't know.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah. So, yeah, they did that quite a bit too, which I thought was neat to see how people compared and contrast the films.
Yeah, but I mean, I enjoyed the book. I thought it was a great read. The book is 320 pages, features 110 separate films reviewed, and it's written by 78 different horror fans from 12 different countries.
Uh-huh.
So it's a pretty big undertaking putting this book together, to say the least.
That's probably the big selling point of this book and why I liked it so much is that it was completely written by fans of the movies, and these are people that understand why these movies are entertaining for other people, okay? It's not some bullshit critic that wants to write a book and get it published because of his social critique of the films or anything like that. It's actually people that are just fans that care about these movies. So with that's why I liked it. I'd highly recommend people pick it up.
Yeah, everybody go and pick it up. It's from Midnight Marquee Press. I'm pretty sure you can get it on Amazon for a fairly good price, just $25. So Definitely check it out. It's Horror 101, the A-list of horror films and monster movies, Volume 1. We both highly recommend it.
Yeah, so there you go. I guess we'll start in with the DVD reviews now.
DVDs, what DVDs do we got, Uncle Bill?
First one I'm going to talk about, I've been waiting to talk about it because it's so fucking hilarious, is Man Eater, which stars Gary Busey.
Yeah.
Who, we'll get into this a little bit later, but who has apparently fallen so far from grace since he was in stuff like Lethal Weapon and, you know, Let's Get Harry and all those films like that.
Silver Bullet.
That now he's starring in films where they can only afford one jacket that doesn't fit for him, which he wears through the majority of this film.
You notice in the movie, too, like, they just have some sort of love for Gary Busey's voice, too, because his voice is turned up, like, two or three decimal levels above everyone else in the movie for some reason. At least it sounded that way on my player. You know, Gary Busey's big, deep, raspy voice. I'm Gary Busey, buddy.
Yeah.
I'm drunk as fuck right now, but I'm making money.
I swear to God. Okay, the film, first off, I think it's supposed to take place in Appalachia, although it doesn't look like any place in Appalachia I've ever seen, really. It is about a Bengal tiger that is loose in this suburb where Gary Busey is the sheriff, okay?
Yeah.
And there's a little kid that knows about this tiger, but apparently nobody else knows about it. And then people start to end up missing. And they start, like, kind of like in Jaws, where a guy comes in who's like a forensic scientist, and he says, you know, these marks on the body can only be caused by a tiger. And everybody's like, well, what the hell will a tiger be doing here? And they don't believe him, and then other people start to die. And then they finally, like Gary Busey, of course, in his ultimate wisdom, catches on to the fact that there's a Bengal tiger loose in this fucking place, and he's got to stop it with the help of some British guy who apparently used to hunt tigers in the Sahara or some bullshit.
Yeah. It's all right, here's the thing. For the average independent film like this, it's actually a lot better than you'd think it would be. Because if you look at the cover of it, it would look like something I would totally never watch. Usually, like, it's got like a paintbrushed tiger with like blood and shit. See, movies like this, I just don't know who they're marketed for, because there's not a lot of movies like this that people actually, you never hear people talk, oh man, that's a fucking killer tiger movie, you know? And it's supposed to be a horror movie too, I guess, but it just,
yeah, there's a whole series of these movies though. They're called something like, they're like animals attack movies. Like there's this one and there's Blood Monkey and there's Mammoth.
Blood Monkey.
There's like a whole series of these movies, seriously though. And, the thing that I found, I didn't think this was a bad movie either, really. I mean, probably one of the better ones from this week.
Although it's, you know, got Gary Busey in it.
But the thing is, yeah, Gary Busey, I swear to God, I was trying to figure out what his deal was throughout this movie, because he looks like, literally, that he just walked out of a car accident throughout the whole film. Like, his hair's all fucked up and his suit doesn't fit, and he looks just dazed all the time. And plus, he's had some kind of plastic surgery or something.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing seeing him now, and I believe back in, you know, the late 70s, he was actually nominated for an Academy Award for the Buddy Holly story, and thinking that he went from, you know, 20, 30 years ago and to doing these, well, I don't want to say, this actually is a mid-level independent film. I mean, it's, surprisingly, the sound, I thought the surround sound on it was really good. It was like above average for independent films for sure. And, you know, it's a decently budgeted film, I'm going to say that, but I just, you know, Gary Busey's got to feel like pure shit.
Well, not in a movie, yeah. Like Gary Busey is actually the worst part about this movie, because not for one second do you believe he's the sheriff of this town, or you don't. He just does, his acting in the film is almost like he's completely gone someplace else throughout the whole thing. Like you can tell he just reads the shit, the lines like right for each scene. It just, there's no effort put behind it. The little kid in the film is slightly annoying too. I don't know if you
he's more
that.
Than slightly annoying, but you get that a lot with little kids, you notice in these movies, especially these independent movies. And there's really, the role of the kid in the movie, it just isn't needed. Like, they could have took the entire kid out of the movie, and they would, you wouldn't have missed him.
Yeah, really. What is it, though? Is it, he got some kind of psychic link with the tiger or some shit like
that? They never did explain any of that or anything.
Oh, yeah, which brings us to the ending of the film, which...
It is the... It's probably the most anticlimactic ending I've ever seen in a movie. One of the most, I'll say that. Because I remember, usually like when I'm a little bit bored watching a movie, here's a little inside info for the people out there. I will play guitar a little while I'm watching a movie. And I remember I was looking down, I was tuning guitar a little bit, and I looked up and the credits were rolling. That was it. There was, see, usually in these movies, even the really bad ones, you can tell when the closing moments are near in these movies. But this one, I absolutely couldn't. I didn't know what the hell was happening.
The funny thing about it is either they ran out of money or Gary Busey, they ran out of time with Gary Busey or he quit or something. Because
they probably ran out of time with the tiger.
Because it completely is unresolved. The film literally stops like the tiger's still loose, the kids, like, everything's exactly the same as when the film started. You're right back to the beginning of the film, and they never resolved anything. There's no climax to the movie. It just stops.
Yeah. And that's my biggest problem with this. I didn't think it was that bad overall. It was better than a couple other movies we'll be reviewing here. But it's not a good movie. It's not something that you want to go out and buy.
No, but seriously. I mean, people might be wondering why it is we say this movie's all right, considering we shit all over it, but... It's a movie about a killer fucking tiger.
Yeah.
How many movies like that do you see anymore?
There's some funny fucking shots.
A win-win concept.
I don't know if you noticed this, where they had like a shot of the tiger's tail and its hind legs, and you could totally tell it wasn't a tiger.
Like, they actually did have a tiger in the movie.
Yeah, they did have a tiger in certain scenes, but that wasn't a tiger. You know.
Yeah.
That was. It looked like a fucking dog to me that they was just following, but. But like I said, though, I mean, it's to me, it's not something that you'll go out and rent or buy. If you're a fan of really bad B movies, you may want to own this. That's about the only reason.
It's a killer tiger.
It is.
Look at that cover, seriously. Is that not fucking hilariously bad? It makes you want to watch it. Look at it.
Not really. You know something, though, I did notice? I think I've seen part of that movie before on Sci-Fi. I think it was on Sci-Fi.
It looks like it was tailor-made for Sci-Fi. Yeah. It really does. Anyway, yeah, that's Maneater. Check it out. Don't. Who gives a shit?
Maneater. Get the other DVDs over before I kill you.
Oh, God.
This one is actually... A lot of people are reviewing this movie right now. I guess they're trying to, you know... Get fans' interests, I guess. This is much in the tradition of Shaun of the Dead. How many of you have read that before on a box?
I've read it at least three or four times since that movie came out.
This is a movie from Stephen Bradley. It's Boy Eats Girl. Now, don't be confused with Boy Meets Girl, which featured Ryder Strong.
Right. This is a Irish horror comedy. Yeah. Which means...
Financed by Fit Family.
That's... Yeah, that is code word for a bad fucking idea. Alright?
Yeah. Let me tell you something, you Irish people. You can't do a horror and comedy. There's no way.
Well, the Irish aren't funny.
Yeah.
They're miserable little drunken people that like to start fights. You know, that's just who they are.
They're miserable little shitheads.
Man, they like to start fights and eat potatoes or whatever else it is they do over in Ireland. But the one thing they don't need to be doing is making horror comedies. Needless to say.
And let me tell you, alright, here's the thing. I am totally sick of zombie movies. I've been sick of zombie movies for a while. I am really sick of zombie comedy films. I mean, my God. You know.
Yeah, it is getting a little bit out of control. And seriously, like, you're scraping the bottom of the barrel when you want to do an Irish horror comedy. An Irish zombie comedy, all right? For one thing about this movie, okay, I guess the plot would be nice. It's the story of a kid who's in high school. He falls in love with this particular girl, okay? And he can't really ever get her attention. When he finally does get her attention, it just so happens that that night he dies. But his mother... is, I think she's a librarian or somehow she's got access to all these books, and she gets this book of incantations and brings him back to life. But she doesn't do it right, and henceforth he turns into a zombie. Okay?
Oh, God.
And he's got to, like, he craves human flesh.
He craves dongs.
He craves the dong. So he goes back, and after that it's basically like a series of blunders where he can't control himself and ends up biting people. He bites one of his nemeses, who's like this bully character in the film that, you know, has been giving him hell because he plays rugby, and he's one of those, like, what was that guy's name, William Zabka characters?
Yeah.
Just like a big asshole to everybody for no reason. Anyway, and then that guy proceeds to turn, like, all of his friends into zombies, so basically the whole town gets turned into zombies, and then hilarity ensues. And that's the story of this film, really.
Yeah.
The only problem is, the jokes don't really work. You're going to make a horror comedy.
Well, as you said, Irish people aren't really funny.
There's a couple problems, actually. You can't always understand what they're saying because they're Irish. They have a really thick brogue.
A little bit like Mr. Blonde when he called in a couple weeks ago.
No, you can understand a lot better than that. But there's a lot of times when I was even like, what the hell are these people saying? I can't really... And another thing, I guess there's some kind of a gap between, like, cultures, because I can't really tell if these people, because they're from Ireland, there's like a different style of acting or something. There's a different style of comedy, too. Like, British people have their own form of comedy.
I guess
Irish people do, too, because a lot of this stuff just completely lost on me. I didn't really... And the main character of the film, I thought he was okay. What's his name? The guy that plays the zombie, I guess, the first zombie.
David Leon.
Sure. I thought he did an okay job. But all the supporting characters, like his love interest in the film, who is really weird because she's a black Irish girl, which is just, I don't know, is odd in and of itself. But she does an okay job. She doesn't do an okay job. She actually does a pretty poor job. I don't know what the hell.
You know who else did a pretty poor job? The guy that designed this fucking cover and airbrushed all their heads off.
Yeah.
That's fucking horrible. You can look on the cover, the fucking lead guy, his picture is exactly the same on the back, but it doesn't have like makeup and shit on or whatever. That's a horrible... I hate when they airbrush people's heads on anyway. They look ridiculous. Look at the guy at the far end there. That's the worst one.
Yeah. Looks like a Nintendo Wii game.
Oh,
yeah, it's pretty bad.
Yeah, it's a horrible movie. That's another one. I mean, I really, because I know a lot of these directors, especially, you know, since we've been starting to do more stuff, actually directing and putting together movies and stuff, and we respect everybody that actually puts a movie together. I mean, I don't want to come across as a dickhole, but I know a lot of people put a lot of work in these movies, and that one actually got a pretty big release. I think it was released by Lionsgate.
Right.
So, I mean, you know. Congratulations on that. I didn't really enjoy the movie, and I can't really recommend it.
Yeah. I will say this for it. I'll give you this. There's a scene towards the end of the film where they're driving around, and the zombies are causing all kind of carnage and different stuff like this. There's a shitload of gore in one particular scene at the end of this film. But like we've said with shit like Hatchet and stuff too, gore cannot make or break a movie like this. Like, if everything else in a movie completely fails, then and that's all you got to look forward to, you'll not watch a movie over and over.
You'll definitely not have a gorgasm with this movie.
No. There's no wondergasming that's going to be going on with this.
So, up next, I guess, definitely wanted to talk about the new movie from Ryan Kavalin, who... Actually, it's a little bit of a storied past we have with him and Fourth Floor Pictures. Some of that stuff, that was some of the very first stuff.
Yep.
And you go back to maybe the first two or three episodes of Deadbeat. That was some of the first stuff we ever reviewed on the show.
I think, if I'm not mistaken, that we actually got some of his stuff in when we were with the Horror Newsletter.
Right.
Which would have been prior to even doing Deadbeat.
So it's a weird thing, you know. That we're back doing this old school type show, you know, which doesn't really feature an interview. And some of the shows early on didn't. You know, this is sort of just like an old school deadbeat show. And we're reviewing a new Fourth Floor Pictures movie. This is a new Dead Body Man movie. Some people out there may not know the Dead Body Man series. And there's actually two other movies prior to this one featuring Willie, who is the Dead Body Man, who, you know, in the previous films, I believe the deal was he was on a mission to God to kill all those who were impure or something like that.
Right.
And he uses their meat, you know, and sells their meat and all that stuff. That was the deal. And the Dead Body Man Chronicles essentially is like a prequel to all those
movies.
It
is, because it goes back and explains, like, everything that happened and how he got to be the way that he is, which we'll be talking about here in a minute.
Yeah. And Willie, of course, is reprised by Eddie Benevich, who I believe emailed us and said he was a fan of the show as well. So I definitely want to mention him on here. And, of course, Ryan Cavillan, and actually, you know, a lot more people work exclusively for Fourth Floor Pictures. And they're, you know, they're starting to build a cult audience along the lines of, you know, the way Trauma did. And these are similar to Trauma-type movies, really. Mm-hmm. And you can tell where the influences are here. But Willie, of course, you show his birth. His mother was a hooker.
I think she was a stripper.
Or a stripper, or yeah, a hooker, or something like that. Stripper slash hooker.
Yeah.
Because that's usually how it works anyway. Seriously. And his mother doesn't really want him. So he's just passed around for a while. And while he's a baby, there's like, it's like a little plastic baby doll. They don't even attempt to.
Right.
You know, they kick the baby around and everything else, and he's not wanted and everything. He ends up with this old war veteran.
Right. Who gives him, he's the one that gives him his name, I think, and then he's constantly talking about meat and how the meat will be with him and all this stuff, and trust the meat and all this stuff. And I think he's supposed to be like a paranoid guy anyway from coming back from the war.
So that's pretty much how he gets his personality.
Yeah.
And so in his, I guess, as he's grown up, he ends up in a mental home, which it's featuring a lot of colorful characters in this. My favorite one has to be the former porn star.
Oh, yeah. That was a good little cameo there.
Who, I can't remember the character's name in the movie, but she actually has like 3 feet long pussy lips.
Yeah, because she's had so much sex.
She's been fucked so much, you know. So I thought that was interesting. And the pussy lips look like giant pieces of bacon.
Yeah, there's like a compulsive masturbator guy that masturbates all
always
the time.
Always has cum all over him and stuff.
And then there's the scene in the film where he's in the home and stuff, and he gets this transmission from a porno that he's watching. And basically, this porn star tells him that he's on a mission from God from, you know, here on out, and he's got to what is it? He's got to save the world or something from all these people.
Yeah.
And then in between that transmission, he gets like a transmission from the devil at the same time that tells him to go out and kill everybody.
Yeah,
it's kind of a weird little.
And this is very different from the other Dead Body Man movies in that it's not really a horror movie. I mean, there's a couple of gore scenes in it that, see, the other Dead Body Man movies featured a lot of gore, and they were pretty much short movies, as I remember. I remember them being around an hour long. Maybe they're a little longer. It's been a long time since I've seen them. But this one's really, I don't even know. It's not a horror movie.
It's like a fucking Farley Brothers film.
Yeah. And, you know, compared to the other movies, I don't like it as much. I'll admit it, because there's some funny parts in it, no doubt. And, you know, there's some entertaining parts in it. But to me, it's way too long. Like, I'm thinking it's like an hour and 45 minutes long, maybe a little longer than that.
Yeah.
And when you're doing a movie like this, you've got to have, if it's that long, it has to have pretty much constant gags, gore, stuff like that, especially for a low-budget movie, because I don't think it'll hold the audience's interest so long, because a lot of the scenes just involve, you know, just talking, pretty much, which a lot of the stuff isn't funny either.
Yeah, if you're going to do I hate to say this, but if you're going to do a film that's completely about gags and stuff,
yeah,
then they should work at least 50% of the time. And, you know, there is some funny stuff in this film, but more often than not, it comes across kind of...
It's drag.
Silly.
It's draggy a little bit.
That's the best way I can say. I mean, I know it's supposed to be silly, but there's two different types of silly. There's silly that when it comes across, like, it's kind of low-key and yeah, you get it, and then there's silly that's just... blatantly overacting and shit.
My rule for independent films, too, is it really needs to be amazing if it's over 90 minutes, really. 80 minutes is pushing it to me. Most great independent films are 80 minutes or less, you know.
Even with that, though, I mean, it could be however long or short the guy wants to. It just has to be entertaining. And in a lot of ways, I think that the guy did try to make this movie entertaining. I mean, he tried with a lot of the humor and a lot of the characters and stuff to make it interesting and hold everyone's interest, but it just, the comedy in the film just doesn't work most of the time. I'm sorry, it just doesn't.
Yeah. But, again, I mean, we appreciate, I mean, it was good to rewatch one of these movies. This is something I was actually looking forward to watching because, believe it or not, I did get a pretty big kick out of the original Dead Body Man movie.
Yeah, I did too.
But this one, I don't even know if this, I don't think this is out yet, but you can stay up to date with Fourth Floor Pictures. I'm believing it's fourthfloorpictures.com. I'm not positive on that, but, you know, I don't have a website here. But check that out, and I think we have another one of their films which we'll be reviewing, you know, in the coming weeks, hopefully. So definitely stay tuned for that, and stay tuned for the Dead Body Man.
Yeah, I mean, I think once this series returns back to the just gratuitous violence horror category that it was once in, it would probably be a lot better. That's probably where it needs to be anyway.
Yeah. So up next is another film, another independent film. A lot of independent films this time of year. You notice that?
I think it's the only time it gets released.
I don't have a problem reviewing it. I like watching independent films most of the time. This is a film starring Felisa Rose.
Felicer.
And Rain Brown's actually in it for one scene. And they use her name here because Rain Brown's actually, she's getting out there as an actress. I mean, you hear her name a lot more. She's involved in a lot more projects. So I guess they wanted to put the name out there for possibly the fans of Rain Brown to get interested in. But she's not really in the movie that much. She's in the movie one scene.
It's a bit of a sleepaway camp reunion in a way because Desiree Gould is in the film as well.
She still looks like a man, too.
Yeah, she was the aunt in the sleepaway camp film, by the way.
She's in the movie briefly, too, though. But Felicia is actually in it a fairly decent amount. I mean, she's in it a decent amount, but none of these people star in the movie, really. But, you know, that's how independent films work.
But they don't, that's the thing. They don't put the names of the people who star on the front of the film to sell it, I guess.
That's true. But the movie Dark Chamber, is what it's called, and it's directed by Dave Campfield, is, it follows the story of a boy, I guess a teenager, a young adult, who goes to live with his dad against the wishes of his mother, who his mother, you know, says all kinds of negative things about the father, and the son, of course, doesn't want to listen to it. But shortly thereafter, and his dad's also like a police officer or a sheriff or something like that.
Right, yeah.
I get confused. But shortly thereafter, though, a lot of gruesome murders start to happen. And actually, one of the boy's new friends that he meets in the town is murdered. And he gets interested in the case and thinks it's somebody in the hotel that his father runs, or is it a hotel?
It's like an apartment building. Yeah. So he decides
he installs cameras?
Video cameras in all the different rooms because he suspects it's one of the people that live in the apartment. And then, while he's surveilling all the people in the apartments and they're all watching him on these different video cameras, he'll send them all a note that says, I know what you did, basically.
I know what you did last summer.
He said, I know what you did to so-and-so. I can't remember the woman's name. And then he video records their reactions to getting the note. And then he tries to figure out who's guilty. Yeah. So, yeah, it is a pretty interesting concept. And then, originally, I think that they start to believe that the murders are caused by a satanic sect called the Say You Love Satan.
The Black Circle.
Killer, yeah. Which is, well, I guess that's what it's based on. The film's based on a real case called the Say You Love Satan Killers.
Say You Love Satan, bitch.
But yeah, it's the Black Circle or whatever in this.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that over the years we've done the show, Felicia Rose is actually, she was on the show, one of the early shows.
Right.
And, you know, I'll be honest with you, I didn't think over the years, especially like some of the independent films that she's done, she isn't really that great of an actress. I mean, usually.
Well, in the film that we saw her in recently, Satan's Playground, which was the one that I had the most trouble believing or acting in, yeah. I guess, I was just, and to some degree Zombiegeddon too, I was just amazed at how much rush she
well,
had
it didn't,
after
all, here,
all those years.
I think here's the problem, though. I don't think she fit in with those movies.
Well, that may
definitely
very well be
Zombiegeddon.
It.
Zombiegeddon.
Because I thought she was vastly improved in this movie, too.
Yeah, she actually did a really good job in this movie, and I was surprised, you know. I mean, I don't know if she's been going to acting school or what, but she did a lot better in this movie than any movie I've seen her in, you know, since Sleepaway Camp, I guess,
yeah.
Since her return. So she did a really good job in this movie. She looked great in this movie, too, for someone that's, you know, I know that she's in her late 30s now, I guess, but... You know, she's in the movie briefly as one of the tenants in the apartment complex deal. And there's a few problems with this movie, but overall I didn't think it was that bad. Some of the problems in the movie was there was a lot of stuff that wasn't explained. They just automatically, like, when the fuck did they even install the cameras and stuff? Did I miss that?
No, I don't think it ever really,
like, they didn't really
went into that.
There's a lot of stuff they skipped over in this where I was just questioning, you know, when did this happen? You know, this happened, we didn't see this. And there's a lot of, I don't know, there's just a lot of random people that pop up and you don't know who the hell they are.
They don't spend a lot of time on each of the tenants is the problem. And to some degree, there's like four or five different tenants that have their own little side story. And none of them are that great. Like there's one guy that's like a Bronx type guy that, you know, has problems because he wants to be an actor and he abuses his Russian wife and all this different stuff. And then you've got the character Felicia Rose, who I think, what is she? Like, is she supposed to be a stripper or something?
Stripper or prostitute?
Something like that. Yeah, you got her in there. They never spend enough time on
her sisters.
Yeah.
Something's wrong with her.
Then you got the big guy that just lays around all the time and fucking
calls hookers.
Yeah.
Or strippers or whatever. There's a lot of characters that you don't know where they come from. You don't know much about them. They're just sort of there. So, and then there's the lead teen character, then a couple of his friends, and then there's, I don't know, there was something towards the end, I ain't gonna give it away, that I thought was like a big twist.
It is. It's got like a twist ending to it. Yeah.
But it's stupid. Like, well, the main twist ending, anybody'd see that coming.
Yeah.
Right at the end. But like, they throw something out there right towards the end that just, like, who cares? Like, why would you?
I think they throw it out there because it is based on a true story, and I'm pretty sure that's the basis of the true story.
Yeah.
Which you can't really say anything else about it, otherwise you give away what the twist is.
Yeah. But, I mean, overall, I thought it was all right. I didn't think it was that bad.
It's like a little bit above average independent film.
Yeah.
To me, anyway. And
it's got a lot of extras on it, actually. Like, I was watching some of the interviews, although they looked like they were shot on a camcorder. The interviews were, you know, people with, they talked with were Felicia Rose, Desiree Gould, Rain Brown, of course. And then you have many documentaries, bloopers, music videos, audio commentaries, you know, a lot of stuff on this, actually. And Shockorama Cinema is actually one of our favorite DVD companies. And definitely want to advise everyone to check it out. It's actually HD TV capable.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know what that means. Whatever.
I guess you can play it on HD.
You can play this on HD TV. Along with every other goddamn DVD you have.
They thought that'd be a nice twist.
Yeah, it makes it look like it's more professional. But I thought it was all right. I didn't think it was that bad.
Yeah, it's something to watch if you have, how long is it, like 90 minutes to waste, yeah.
So the last movie we're going to talk about on here is from director James Wan. And it's a movie that a lot of people didn't see in theaters, and it was actually out pretty much everywhere. I know it was out here. So if it was out, you know, in Prestonsburg/Pikeville, Kentucky, I'm sure almost anybody in the whole fucking country could see it if they wanted to. It's a movie, actually, I think it came out the same weekend as Rob Zombie's Halloween.
It did, because it got completely fucking hammered by that movie. But this is James Wan's Death Sentence, which is a throwback, as a lot of people might expect, to films like Chuck Bronson's Death Wish and Billy Jack and Walking Tall and all the vigilante films that were really popular in the 70s and 80s.
And this is a really surprising movie coming from James Wan, who strictly horror, you know. And this isn't a horror movie at all. This is just an old-fashioned revenge movie.
Mm-hmm.
And Kevin Bacon, you have Kevin Bacon and his wife, which is played by the lovely Kelly Preston. It's a shame she married John Travolta. What the fuck?
I don't know. But why the hell isn't Kelly Preston in more stuff, though?
I don't know, but let me tell you something, okay? She's still hot. She's still hotter than hell.
She's still a good actress, too.
Yeah, and she's always great to watch, and she's got a lot of charisma, if you will. Back in the day, though, man, like around the Twins era, Kelly Preston, to me, it just doesn't get any hotter than that. I mean, Jesus Christ. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Oh,
yes.
My God, Kelly Preston. Mixing John Travolta with Dufty. Oh, my God, Kelly Preston.
It sounds like when you used to at Bruno Mattei. Anyway.
But Kelly Preston, of course, and then, like, their two sons. And there's, like, the jock son who plays hockey. Isn't it hockey? It's hockey, isn't it?
Yeah, it's hockey.
And they're really proud of him. Then there's the younger son, which is sort of,
goddamn,
you know,
slacker is what
he
is.
Yeah, he's a slacker. And he's not really as outgoing as the older son. But one night, Kevin Bacon, of the world-famous Bacon Brothers, and his older son, the jock son, the, you know, the prodigal son, if you will, are heading back from a hockey game, and his son is caught in the middle of a gang ritual, I guess you would say, and killed. And Kevin Bacon, of course, sees all this, and along the way tries to stop the guy that shot his son, and of course sees him face to face, knows what he looks like and everything. And when he identifies him, they're going to go to trial, all this, he realizes he's going to get off. There's nothing he can do about it. He's going to get away with murdering his son. So there's where it sort of starts. Where half the it's like half and half revenge movie. Half of the revenge movie starts there. And I don't really want to give away the other half, because it really is like, I didn't see it coming. I really did. But let's say just Kevin Bacon takes the law in his own hands. We'll say that. And just not give any more of it away.
Well, it's
and
odd.
Goes
because
after the gang.
I thought it was odd because the film actually starts off with kind of, it's almost like Kevin Bacon is, he ends up killing some of these guys that murdered his son, but it's almost like he doesn't want to.
Yeah.
Like he's kind of dragged into it, and he's really conscious about what he's doing. And it really is like James Wan made it to where he was a vigilante, but he was one that definitely didn't even want to be doing what he was doing. And like one guy gets killed when they try to get revenge on Kevin Bacon, and they come after
because
him, he gets killed inadvertently.
The first guy that he kills is actually a little bit of an accident.
Yeah.
So,
but
and
then
it makes it like more believable, really. You know, because most people, if they're, you know, honest, good-hearted people, are not really going to want to kill anybody regardless of what happens. And that's how it would be in real life.
Well, he's a nervous wreck after the first thing. But then the film in the second part of the movie shifts gears completely. And he's very intent on doing what he's doing. Yeah. So it is kind of like a morality play in that sense.
And there's some of the best action scenes. Like there's a scene in this parking garage that is freaking unbelievable. I can only imagine how long that took to shoot.
It's got some great camera work
from
the top like a some awesome helicopter shots. Stuff.
And actually, the unrated version of the DVD has some, it's not a whole lot of gore stuff. There's a couple of really awesome shots in there, like, you know, with, involving a shotgun. I'll just say that.
And we've talked about this, too, that the one guy in the film that I was completely amazed by was John Goodman, because John Goodman has like a smaller role as like a gun peddler that Kevin Bacon runs into, who also is affiliated with the gang that Kevin Bacon is trying to kill.
Yeah.
He's trying to get revenge on. And I thought it, you wouldn't even really ever think it was John Goodman.
No.
I mean, it's like a complete 180.
He's never played a role like this, yeah. I'm pretty sure. And he does a really, I was surprised as hell. I mean, when I saw John Goodman in that role at first, I was like, what? What the fuck was he, what the hell's he doing? But he did a great job. John Goodman's actually, he must be a really good actor.
So. Yeah, he pulled that off flawlessly. The gang itself is actually pretty good because they're all, they all look like scumbags, for one thing. But the only problem I had with it is that it's, I don't know if because of racial issues or prejudice issues or whatever that he had to, he felt the need to do this, or if it was just a statement about anybody can be in a gang, but it's like a mixed gang.
Yeah.
There's like white guys and black guys and Mexican people.
Well,
it just, I think James, that does not happen.
I think James Wan could have gotten away with the Aryan Brotherhood gang if he wanted to, because James Wan is an Asian Australian guy.
Right.
So he could pretty much get away with any sort of racial deal.
Yeah, the thing about it is, seriously, that does anybody know that really happened other than in movies? Because,
uh-oh,
look, you got the, every time you ever hear about a real gang, it's always like the Latin Kings versus, you know, the Crips and the Bloods. Like, there's no gangs where you're like, oh, that's a mixed group of people, are there?
You really, I don't know. I mean, the last movie I remember seeing the thick racial angle in was American History X, which was an awesome movie, and it actually won a lot of awards. I'm guessing he just didn't want to do that in this movie, maybe.
He probably knew he would get into trouble if he tried to do it. But the fact of the matter is that, to me, is a little bit unconvincing, that part of it.
Yeah.
But the guy who plays the lead of the gang, and I cannot remember his friggin' name, save my life.
No, well, here's the reason. Fox doesn't send us actual DVDs.
Yeah, that'd be really nice if we had something to look at. But
we don't have, they don't even send, like, press releases or anything. They send just the DVD-R, which is fine, but we're not going to remember all the names of these people.
Anyway, the leader of the gang, who's actually like Kevin Bacon's lead nemesis in the film, I thought did an excellent job as well. Like, he's very convincing as somebody that just, after a point,
you
doesn't give a damn. Yeah, he doesn't, like, care what happens to him, and to a point, what happens to anybody else.
You know, it's a shame that this movie came out when it did, I think. Although, I don't see it ever being a massive hit, just the type of movie it is.
It wasn't.
But I think that it could have got a bigger, it would have been a bigger hit than it was.
It's almost like it was made not to be a massive hit, though. It's like a cult film in the fact of it's an exploitation film anyway.
And I don't see anybody couldn't respect James Wan. And I'm hoping. I mean, I want to be honest with you about the interview. The interview wasn't the best interview we ever did, whether you get to hear it or not. Because
it was a timed
interview. And we were a little rushed, but James Wan seemed like a really good guy, and hopefully at some point we can have him on the show for a real Dead Pit style interview. But hopefully you all get to hear the interview that we did sometime. But I think that this guy he's a guy you need to keep an eye on, because he doesn't want to stick to anything in particular. Like, to me, it sounded like to me when we talked to him, he just wants to sort of avoid the Saw series from now on. I mean, he did his one Saw movie, and that's good enough. You know, he wants to try something new. And how many of those Splat Pack members can you honestly say wants to go out and do something new every time, you know, every movie?
I'm curious, though, because there's a guy that writes for IMDb. Or is it IMDb, or is it... No, it's not IMDb, it's DVD Talk. And he's got up like his top 10 and bottom 10 horror films of the year. And I have no idea why that guy really fucking hates James Wan, because two of James Wan's films are in the bottom, his bottom 10 films, Dead Silence and Death Sense. I have no idea why that is, but I'd love to know, like, what it is about that makes people write shit like that. Because to me...
What site was it?
I think it was DVD Talk.
I think people still... See... A lot of people didn't want to give Dead Silence a chance just because it was another puppet sort of movie. And I don't even see Saw as a puppet movie. I never saw that. but it had a puppet in it, I guess. People just, I don't know, that's how people are, but he's, to me, you know, he's the best of the Splat Pack guys so far. I mean, he's the one that I constantly wait for new stuff, you know.
But with genre filmmakers, with people that make films that are in certain genres, like, you know, exploitation, revenge films, and horror films, you're going to have people like that that will just not like those fucking movies no matter what. Yeah. And it just, it upsets me because it's almost like they don't even really watch the films.
Like,
yeah, they just, they automatically pigeonhole him anyway.
Well, I think that we get a little bit of that too because, you know, a lot of people, they only look at the stuff that we hate on and they don't want to look at the stuff that we like, which we, believe it or not, we like the majority of the crap we talk about on here. I mean, if you look at it week by week, maybe not this week, look at it. But, you know, this was a mainstream film. James Wan, we've always said that we thought he was a talented filmmaker. You know, after I saw Dead Silence, I realized that the guy actually does have more to offer than the, you know, the torture genre and all that. So I just think
people need to
seriously open their eyes.
I'll be completely honest about it. Like, I like this movie more than I did Dead Silence.
Well, I figured that. I didn't think you liked Dead Silence.
I thought Dead Silence was okay. I really did, though. And I'm not a big, massive fan of, like, exploitation films anyway, but I thought this one, in the style of those films, is probably one of the better ones, actually, even from the stuff from the 70s and 80s.
Yeah. It's a really good film. It's not really a horror film, but, hell, I mean, why not review it? I mean, I always wanted to see this movie. Unfortunately, we went to see the fucking Halloween movie instead of seeing this.
We so should have gone and seen that one.
But you definitely check that out. It's on DVD. It came out this week. You'll definitely want to buy that. Buy it now, or I'll kill every one of you.
Yeah, so I guess that's the end of the review section of the show.
That's the end of the show. Y'all have a good time.
It was lovely.
I'm sure their audio sounds a little fucked up, but who cares?
Yeah, y'all ought to be fucking thankful we even did this.
You ought to be happy if you have your dead picture.
So let's go ahead and play everybody out here real quick, won't we?
What are we going to play?
Since we don't have any of the shit.
Oh, I know what we can play.
Do that? Here, we'll go ahead and let's see. See if I can remember it. It's taking me a
next week.
Bye.